Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And the Lord said to Heather Gay, "Come up to me on the mountain and wait there, that I may give you the tablets and text messages of stone with the law and the commandment, which I have written for their instruction." That is Exodus 5:16. And you guys, it's Andy Scrolls. It's Exodus 6:30-something or whatever. And I have now seen the Salt Lake City finale, oh gosh, I think only 2 times, which is shocking. But much like whomever schlepped the Ten Commandments and whatever, I have also done a little bit of a light transcribe. It is something... The only time I can really remember putting in this kind of effort was I've done some AG theater on past apps, couldn't name a single one, and go me. And also, obviously, She Fucked Half of New York, which is saved in multiple notes in my phone. So all I have to do is type, which is, who needs an excuse, but fucked half of New York, and it'll pop up not once, but a couple times. But I watched the Salt Lake City finale, and I said, some of this needs to be written down. Because I also think, word is bond, word is God, word is whatever. And it's important to know, I'm sure I've like fucked up a couple of the words, so go me. But once again, but I'm sure that while I may have missed some of it, I think it's important to really lean into what was said because this felt like a masterclass. It's so hard for me, like apologies to Beverly Hills and Potomac, it's so hard for me to talk about Salt Lake City and not mention New York. Because I just want to like yell, which I have done before and will do on some upcoming Andy's Girls that I recorded this week. It's hard not to just kind of shake the idea of Real Housewives of New York, New New York, and yell at it and say, you might not be able to be the other girl, but you could still be something if only you cared. And it's not to take anything away from Salt Lake City. It's just to say, I wish that Salt Lake City could be a little bit of a wake-up call of like, maybe not everyone can or should rise to the unparalleled excellence of Salt Lake City, where everybody's just leaning the fuck in. The cast, production, Britney's terrible hair, everything is happening as it should happen, as it should be. And I just wish for some of the Fakakta franchises that we could watch Salt Lake City. It could be like required viewing to say, maybe you can't be this good, but you could be okay. I mean, I don't even know how it is possible for Salt Lake City to have had such a meaningful finale in the way that I felt this finale delivered. Like last season, obviously, in the history books, Reality Von Teese and whatever else, It's just a reminder, even in the lead up to these finales, did anyone hear a fucking whisper of what we were going to witness during the finale, except for Bravo's obviously like strategic drops of here's a preview, here's a preview? We didn't, or at least I don't believe that we did, because the cast knows how to shut their fucking mouths. And that is a lost art. At some point along the way, I think the fandom, audience, whatever, rewarded cast members for leaking. And maybe it's that, maybe it's also a combination of Housewives has become such a pop culture phenomenon and so easy to monetize. People are going to go to like the blog or Daily Mail tabloidy spots when they mention Housewives because we are craving content, where people were genuinely rewarded. Maybe those were direct individuals in the Bravo universe. Maybe it's a way for a production or the network to like draw attention, or the ways for cast members to arm themselves against each other. But it became commonplace, too commonplace for us, sometimes against our will, to know too much about what was happening in a season that may not have even started airing, where it's like, listen, we still have the season trailer where we're getting little drops of stuff that's going to happen. We get kind of big explosions, don't necessarily know the details, but in the last couple years especially, it feels like we have, where what is the excitement here? What's the surprise? I mean, I do think to myself, and this is so specific and really so granular, how incredible it would have been if there hadn't been a drop from a non-cast member in the days leading up to last season Salt Lake City finale, where there was somebody, and I apologize, I don't remember specifically who, tangentially related to like Monica's universe or Jen Shaw's universe, where they dropped, oh, there's going to be a reveal during the finale that has to do with Monica and a blog that she was behind. Now, it's possible not a lot of people saw that. I unfortunately did, which I didn't want to. So there was a little piece of my mind that was like, that knew a little bit about what was coming. But did that really impact the experience of watching the masterpiece that was last season? No. I still screamed. I still cackled. I was watching live, stopping every 3 seconds to type like holy shit into Instagram stories and then press play once again. Like I was still in it. But there is something so incredible that, to my knowledge, nobody was talking in the greater Bravo community universe about text messages or something else. I had no idea what was going to happen during the finale, which is the place where I want to most live. I want to be in that place because it feels so rare nowadays that we're genuinely surprised. And the thing with Salt Lake City is these women are professionals and they know how to keep a fucking secret. Maybe not from unnamed blogger podcasters or whatever who became a sort of too connected to the plot, but when it comes to the Housewives knowing that they are carrying a gift, they are a part of a gift, I really appreciate that everyone knows enough to shut the fuck up. Now, I was thinking about the finale as a whole, and I felt like, I don't know why, but this is just how I was able to kind of organize it in my brain, that there were four-ish parts of the episode that kind of like encompassed the whole, that really were personally meaningful to me. Thanks again to everyone for the gift. Number one was the Lisa lunch, because it was the introduction, I think, that Whitney was saying, I'm coming for you and I'm coming for you hard. The second was Mary and Angie's connection, and obviously upset over a seemingly temporary disconnection, but understanding more about Mary and also really appreciating Angie just rising to the occasion and knowing in this moment, any idea or semblance, not that I think when I think Angie, I think ego, I don't, but like any semblance of ego or anything else, Angie just saw Mary exactly where she was and met her there. And that is a rarity. You can argue it's a rarity sometimes in friendships and relationships off camera, just like IRL, but it's definitely a rarity on Housewives and maybe in this cast where the response isn't defensiveness, even if that defensiveness one could argue is like deserved. It's really someone saying, I hear you, I am here for you, and I am not going to abandon you now. Even if you want me to, even if you're acting like we already have, I am going to fight to get us to a place where we are both okay. And maybe a part of that is like Angie sacrificing any kind of response that she could share back of like, you know, why would you think it's okay to end our friendship over, you know, comforting Brittany in your mind, choosing Brittany over myself? Well, she's listening to what Mary is saying and she's realizing this person needs me and I need to make abundantly clear that I love them, I'm here for them, and I'm sorry. Like that to me requires such a level of, it's not even emotional maturity, it's just honestly grace. And sometimes grace comes with a little bit of a sacrifice, even if Angie doesn't feel it that way. But the grace to really be present for Mary in that moment was incredible. And I was going to circle back to it, but it's like, let's just actually get into it now. The only asterisk I would put on that moment, which I found so impactful, was like, is Mary going to be able to sit in disappointment with Angie in the future? Now, I know they're at the tail end of this crazy trip. She's, you know, had some Mary's had some arguments with Brittany. Obviously, they don't fuck with each other. So Mary, in that moment, can completely understand, feels like my close friend who knows all of my or a lot of my like family secrets that I haven't told anyone else, and you know, for good reason, to be honest, she's going through it. She needs someone that she can genuinely trust. She feels that with Angie. I think she made the absolute right choice. But I could understand Mary feeling like, after all we've been through, why the fuck are you going to comfort this girl who doesn't fuck with me? Like, how are you choosing her over me? And it is a choice that you have to make. I think what is so impactful in that moment is genuinely Angie's grace and the love that they both have for each other, and Mary allowing herself to open back up, where she's like, no, I'm fucking closing the door, go fuck yourself. But the door is ajar. Maybe she knew it, maybe she didn't. The fact that she was able to, what would the word be to you? The fact that she was able to have, it's not even like enough empathy for herself, but the fact that she was able to have enough trust in Angie, even if she's saying, I do not trust you at all, she still obviously does, where they can have these moments where they're both teary and saying, I love you. I felt like that was so profound, so moving, so meaningful. The only asterisk is Mary able to sit in disappointment and discomfort with friends? Where it's not a zero-sum game, where it's not like you're with me or you're against me. She's talking about her family history. She's talking about trauma. She's talking about hearing her father when she's 6 years old say, I don't like my kid because I can't control her. I don't like my kid because she speaks her mind. I mean, that stays with you forever. Mary acknowledging it and acknowledging the damage, I think, is incredibly profound. But the reality is, Angie's not responsible for all of that. Like, Angie's not responsible for being punished because Mary has gone through so much terrible, toxic stuff in her life. So at a certain point, and maybe this is the breakthrough moment, maybe this is a way for Mary and Meredith to break through at the reunion, to have sort of a broader conversation or something for her maybe to connect with next season when every single person at that table is back, absolutely every single one. But I just kind of wonder, when Angie disappoints Mary again because it's going to happen. People are complicated. People are going to make choices or express opinions that another person might disagree with. Is that game over for Mary and Angie? Can Mary acknowledge that it is not Angie's job to carry, not carry Mary's trauma, but to constantly adjust her behavior so that Mary isn't upset? At a certain point, can two imperfect people be able to like love and support each other and keep things moving along? I don't know if that makes any sense. I kind of worry at points, as much as I really appreciated Angie in that moment, as much as I really appreciated Mary's honesty, capacity to, you know, quote unquote, like forgive Angie, regardless of how you feel about how big a trespass that might have been. And also, we're filming a TV show. This is the thing that we can't discuss, but like someone needs to go over there and comfort Brittany on camera. It can't be a producer at this point. They're too busy waiting to hold Angie back, as we get into a little bit later in the episode. I just kind of hope that if and when something happens with these two in the future, with Angie and Mary in the future, that it doesn't need to be game over in that. That Mary understands, as she obviously does, I've experienced a lot, but it doesn't always mean that my responses because of my trauma are deserved for someone else in that situation. You can be disappointed in people's behaviors and actions. Does that really mean the entirety of your friendship needs to be over? And if it does, what does it say about that friendship maybe? Or what does that say about your ability to be a friend to another person? Because we're seeing a big focus right now on Mary, incredibly important, absolutely deserved. But what happens in the future if Angie is disappointed? Is she going to be given the kind of grace by Mary that she extended this time? I hope yes. I really do. And I don't mean to get into like a negative Nancy place with this. I really don't. I'm just curious about the eventual complications that can happen between genuinely just imperfect people. P.S. We all are. There was just something so profound to me about Angie saying to Mary at the start of this, like, I spent months trying to gain your confidence. Mary pushing back, I didn't ask you to. Me thinking to myself, like, what is happening with this trust fall exercise between these two people? Literally, what is happening? Angie saying to her is thinking of the fullness of their relationship. You said God brought us together. Mary being like, I could have been wrong. And Angie not shutting down in that moment and just saying to her and really saying to her, I love you. You changed my life. I don't know that there could be a better, more beautiful way to not like convince someone that you are safe, that you're a safe space, but to just really say, I found meaning in us and I know you did too. So I just need you. This was their five diamond ring. Not to drag Todd in, because Lord knows he's got enough from those texts. But just to say, there is something incredible about that moment, and incredible in Mary being honest too, and being like, you hurt me. I thought you were that safe space. Like, how are you breaking that bond? Or rather, you broke that bond by going after Brittany. It was just exactly that, because she doesn't want to deal with or carry additional emotional baggage and trauma after being in the middle of carrying what happened when her parents abandoned her. Like, that's really tough. And I think that's something that a lot of people can connect with, even if they haven't necessarily gone through what Mary experienced. I absolutely connected with that, like plus plus. And the way that she was talking in the confessional too about the impact of abandonment and going through that as a little kid, and like, my dad left, he never came back, so I brace myself just in case. That lands with a fucking thud, as does Angie brought me sisterhood. Sometimes you can't be family with your real family. Maybe there's a part of Mary that's saying to Angie in that moment when she's like game over, maybe there's a part of Mary that's saying to Angie, like, you hurt me, I'm leaving first, that she couldn't say as a six-year-old child to her dad, where there's like a little bit there I think that we could all maybe kind of sit on and unpack. I'm sure it's going to, I really didn't mean to like deep dive in it at that point, but this is the ride, okay? Let's all keep moving along. I am sure it's going to be a big part of the reunion, and it should be. I thought it was such a meaningful moment. And we'll get into maybe a more layered chapter for NGK, for the Stangies in the universe. But anyway, so for me, there were a couple points. There was the Lisa lunch where we saw Whitney really saying, truly go fuck yourself. Also a little bit of a window into Lisa Barlow, the things that most charm her when people show up in wigs to have, you know, eight Lisas or whatever, which is genuinely iconic. Like her face when she walked in was profound and filled with joy. And I watched that moment a couple times. But when people are impersonating her and every single impersonation until we kind of reach the end has to do with money and brands, and Lisa is delighted that they see her as someone who's so focused on, I don't even know if I would call it fashion, genuinely, yes, but also just like retail, where it's so focused on, sure, having like a certain style, but it's really about buying the thing. And she was delighted in it. I was really like thinking to myself, oh my God, if someone said that about me, God forbid, I would really be very uncomfortable with them thinking that the entirety of me is not even an extension, but just like a marker of a person's debit card or shopping bag. I would not be thrilled with someone thinking that that potentially is the value that I bring. I know it's also a caricature, like they're also obviously making jokes here, but I don't know. That I think the thing that Lisa was charmed by was like, first off, the focus is entirely on her, number one. And number two, it is that like you have diamonds and crazy cars and incredible vacations and all the clothes a person could dream of, or maybe not. It's another person's nightmare, probably, and so much more. And she's like, thank you so much for this present, which is seeing that I have a lot of cash. Like that to me was kind of the walk away from that, which made me kind of sad for Lisa, to be honest. But then Whitney went in for the kill and I was like, oh, okay, other shit is happening. So we had the Lisa lunch. We had Mary and Angie. The podcaster portion of the dinner, I thought was really emblematic, not just of a trap that Whitney and Meredith may have fallen into, but a thing that encompasses seemingly every franchise. The only one that I think isn't directly falling into that trap because they're so new and so bad is New New York, where although I guess Brin's tried to leverage it a little with people making what she believes are sugar daddy jokes and stuff, like content creators. But that doesn't feel, that's more of like an us against them mentality of I'm the Bravoleb on camera and everybody else has me kind of like under attack, versus the relationship or level of trust that Whitney and Meredith both seemingly had with this podcaster, who I guess, it's so confusing to me, but I guess told Meredith that Whitney told the podcaster she believed that Lisa planted the Alibaba rumors and was trying to get the podcaster to help her find proof. And then the podcaster told Meredith he never gave her proof. And then Whitney said, no, he did. He just said it over the phone that Lisa was the person, which is P.S. not a receipt. And I just, the walk away seems to be, like, I think Meredith thinks her hands are clean because her only participation in this is being sort of assured or reassured by the podcaster that he didn't say the things to Whitney that Whitney says that he did. But I still think they're both falling into this little hole here because it's all focusing on trust. You are trusting this person completely outside who may have a vested interest in having relationships or having content, who knows what, but you're trusting someone outside of the cast. And that is like rule breaker number one of taking someone's word as God. Like that to me seems to be the thing that they're both falling over themselves to proclaim is like, no, this person told me something else and I believe them. And that to me is like problem number one. You're both doing the same thing, obviously, to me, Whitney, much more actively, but you're both believing that because this person told you what you wanted to hear, that means that that's the truth of the matter, or that means that your version of events needs to be more or better trusted than the other person's. It's kind of a mess.
Last year, save more money was the most popular New Year's resolution in America. Clearly, a lot of us feel like our money is slipping through our fingers. But it's not your fault. The whole world is trying to spend your money. There's streaming apps, delivery fees, tips on self-checkout machines. The list goes on and on. Good thing there's Acorns. Acorns hopes to grow your money into more of your money. Especially helpful for me because living in New York City, I swear you walk outside and somehow you've spent $100 before walking a single solitary block. In New York City, of course, we always say everything is at your fingertips. But with all of these delivery services, especially if I'm recording in the middle of a peacock binge, shout out the traders, those delivery fees really, truly add up. Acorns can help you fight back. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing so your money has a chance to grow for you, your kids, and your retirement. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that fits you and your money goals. And you don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you invest with the spare money you've got right now. You can start with $5 or even just your spare change. I spend a lot of time on the pod talking about emotional intelligence. Financial intelligence is equally important. Head to acorns.com/andyscrolls or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/andyscrolls. Could your daily routine be full of hormone disruptors? There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now. In our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, this season of Real Housewives of New York, and they all mess with our hormones. Then there's the natural hormonal changes our bodies go through. For me, it's those couple days before my period when I just don't feel like myself. And there's also perimenopause and menopause. And while it's a natural process, it doesn't mean we don't suffer through it. The good news is we don't have to suffer through anymore because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hashtag spiritually mid-20s plus. That's why Hormone Harmony is perfect for women of all ages who are struggling with life-disrupting symptoms such as PMS symptoms like irritability, moodiness, discomfort, menopause symptoms like hot flashes, night sweats, poor sleep, and feeling tired all the time. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. Hormone Harmony is not just a hormone-supporting supplement. It's become a phenomenon. And the biggest benefit? Feeling like myself again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndysGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndysGirls for 15% off today. I never knew you could treat depression symptoms from your phone. But with this prescription app called Rejoin, it's possible. It's for adults age 22 and up with major depressive disorder who want to add to their antidepressant medication. And get this, it's the first and only prescription app authorized by the FDA to treat depression symptoms. Rejoin does not replace your current medication. Be sure to use as directed by your healthcare provider. And if your depression symptoms worsen, seek help immediately. Get started today by talking to your healthcare provider or visiting meetrejoin.com. That's meet, REJOYN.com.
There's that. That's number one. Number two, Whitney has a tendency of using the phrase receipts or proof, God forbid screenshots, fucking everything, because she really has a strong belief. And I don't know if this gets into like pre-Mormon excommunication of all I need is a strong belief to feel like this truth is the reality of events. I don't know if there's some of that mixed in, or like I don't need proof to know that I should be behaving in a certain way or that I'm a victim in a situation. I really couldn't tell you. But what I can say is that Whitney has spent an awful lot of time over the course of this season of attempting to prove to us that Lisa gave info to creators or whomever that Alibaba was really kind of the OG jewelry designer that Prism was then selling. Does that make any sense? That like what Whitney is saying over and over again is that Lisa is the puppet master trying to get Whitney and Whitney's business in hot water. And Whitney is trying to prove that the full season, but it's like, where is the actual proof? You cannot say that a conversation with this person, when we don't even really have the full conversation recorded, is, because how do we know that that person is telling the truth? How is that proof of your belief? All we have over and over again is Whitney being like, I'm raising my voice. I'm very activated. So I'm definitely right. It gives me apologies, a little Robin Dixon energy from Traitors of like, I have an idea and I'm being loud when I say it and passionate and vocal. And so that means that I am correct. I think Whitney would do a great job at annoying the fuck out of me on Traitors season 4. I think maybe that should in fact happen because she's so passionate that her opinion is fact in a way that is like nonsensical to me. And also, this is all a huge distraction from her kind of like hobby business thing where we're not even talking. She's never been really in the spotlight when it comes to on-camera storyline of like, can you defend your jewelry company selling stuff that's sort of repurposed from what I don't even know honestly what Alibaba is, but like a big discount chain, like a Amazon Prime Temu kind of thing where you're trying to say that this is like new or original pieces, but you can actually buy it for 10% of what you're selling or whatever, allegedly, et cetera, et cetera. She really isn't being pressured to explain that at all or explain that like maybe Prism is a joke. Or maybe she's not as involved in it as she wants us to believe she is. She doesn't have to do any of that. So how much of trying to make herself the victim and make Lisa Barlow the villain, how much of that is just trying to swap the story as much as possible to distract us from what I think, honestly, so few people would really care about, which is whether her joke jewelry line is in fact a joke. I mean, I know that, you know, housewives, you know, join the franchise and there is understandable hope or belief that you're going to monetize it, that you're going to be the new Bethany Frankel or whatever else. And you see it with the tchotchkes, with the schlock, with the stuff that people immediately put out, oftentimes without any kind of like purpose or style or care, because to be honest, there will be an audience, including myself, of someone who's like, oh, this is a thing. It's part of an LOL. It's not about the quality of it. It's just about saying,
that I don't know if it's even like parasocial commerce. It's just about saying like, this is a part of the universe of Bravo that I can own. So I'm going to get the stupid $80 mug or something that's like very overpriced, or God forbid, mortgage my home to get a She by Sheree jogger. I'm going to do whatever, not because I necessarily love the style of it, but because it is maybe a cheeky LOL, but it's just a little bit of like paying, for some people, paying your dues, having a little bit of, it's like getting a souvenir from the experience of being a Bravoholic. With Whitney, I just kind of think, I don't know. It's tough. You see, Heather Gay has done an exceptional job of monetizing her time on Housewives, New York Times bestselling author. Beauty Lab and Laser seems to be, you know, blowing up. They expanded everything else. She gets into the fact that it wasn't until joining later on in the dinner, it wasn't until joining Housewives that she really felt like she could dream bigger for herself. Well, her dreams really did come true. When it comes to financial independence, being able to support her kids, not depending on her ex, finding the ability to really trust in herself, maybe from a self-esteem perspective, like, look at all this stuff I was able to accomplish because of being me, where you're maybe putting on a little bit of a show, but people genuinely love Heather. And it's because of how Heather came into this, you know, guns blazing or whatever else, very cheeky, seemingly with a really great sense of humor and common sense, season one. So it is possible. I don't know if Whitney, God bless her, thinks that that's in her future. And the idea that maybe a cast member is coming for it is something that she needs to really attack. I mean, sure, if I felt or heard or whatever that a member of my cast, part of this trust circle or whatever, was coming for my job, yeah, I would be really upset. But that doesn't mean that you have proof, receipts, screenshots, fucking everything. Like, it just, it really doesn't mean that your version of events is the only version of events and is the truth of the matter. I can get why she's being defensive. It is also an LOL that everything, it's like bringing a gun to a knife fight. You know, it's like your response to stuff is so overblown based on what you are arguing this person, what this person did to you, which maybe you believe that Lisa was involved. Is it deserving or equal to Whitney's response and the ways that Whitney wanted to really, really come for her as hard as humanly possible? The thing with Whitney that I actually do kind of appreciate that makes me chuckle is like her strong defense that she is an absolute innocent who really seemingly is only trying to protect herself, but also has the best intentions, which I haven't necessarily seen play out. I mean, look at what her cousin said about her. It's not necessarily great, but I was very much appreciative of Heather Gay in that moment, essentially saying to these two women, like, what the fuck are you doing? Consider the source. You're both being manipulated. So, holy shit. And also, Whitney accusing Lisa of sharing info with Reality Von Teese, something I think didn't several of the cast members do? Wasn't that a thing with Angie K too last season? Again, I don't know whose hands were clean there, but Whitney wanting to know the truth, so she called Monica, a proven liar who confirmed Whitney's version of events. I'm not saying that Monica automatically lied, but what does she owe Whitney? Like, yeah, you're saying some shit about Lisa, who I hate. Sure, I'm going to vouch for you. Why? It's not even about whether Monica told the truth. It's like, why would Whitney believe her? And what is the point of all of this? Just be lucky that, I guess we're not talking that much about Prism, except here we are. And it's because of Whitney's response. I have to say, one of maybe my favorite moment of the entire episode, and this is, I acknowledge, probably such a nothing burger, is when Whitney pointed her finger at Lisa and Lisa kind of like swatted her away, a la junior high fights, altercations, when you're not actually necessarily, or elementary school, where you're not like really fighting with someone, but it seems like you're fighting with someone because you're using fighting words, where she just swats her hands away and says, like, don't don't point your fucking finger or whatever in my face. And then Whitney double points. When Whitney double pointed, I gasped. I was just, little did I know what was to come minutes later in the episode. But I actually did say to myself, like, wow, that was very aggressive of her. A double pointing. I don't know how to defend that response, except to say I still feel it. I have to tell you, I still feel like it was a very aggressive response on Whitney's behalf to just to point at Lisa. Lisa's like, stop pointing. And then Whitney to just take out both arms, both hands and double point. I just thought to myself, oh, now we're at war. Okay, this is it. Like, this is the Salt Lake City Pearl Harbor. Like, that is what is happening because of a goddamn double point. Like, holy shit. So we have the first three kind of overarching, meaningful moments for me so far in the episode. The Lisa lunch, which said an awful lot about an awful lot. Obviously, Mary and Angie. The podcaster, Rumor Michigas. But the other thing that I genuinely thought, and this is when I went into big old transcription mode, is I have to be super honest. Heather is good at her job. Heather is critical for the Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. Heather is a performer and knows how to craft, plan, and deliver lines. I'm not saying everything that she said, especially during her monologue, was like a prepared script, but it was definitely prepared remarks. She knew what she wanted to say and what she wanted to achieve. It was like going from one destination to the other. She needed to figure out a way to connect some of these dots, acknowledge that several people are at war, and say, well, I have an idea of how we can, I guess, burn it all down by comparing some of our shittiness to each other to Monica's burn book and introducing something that I absolutely assume had been a conversation with Heather in production before the dinner, which is, I have a great activity for everyone. Let's all go around in a circle and find the shittiest thing that we have said about someone else here in attendance and share it. And the way that I can get you to really try, or the way that I can try to get you to reveal and share a nasty thing that might make you feel bad is to say there are going to be no consequences for your acts. No consequences, that we all agree, not that anyone really had a choice in this, and Meredith obviously did not want to participate because her reaction at the beginning was like, this is absurd, that we are allowing each other to be shitty. The thing that usually happens at a finale where there's usually fireworks, because we're not going to hold this person against this for the rest of our time on this show. Obviously, you can't force someone to forgive someone else, but you can certainly lay down a little bit of a path here for people to really genuinely share some fucked up shit, maybe as revenge. That's been costumed in, oh no, this is just our path forward, is to just be a real big dick. And the other part that makes me feel like the cast knew that this was happening, someone said it, I watched the after show. I forget if someone said it on the after show or on social or whatever, but a member of the cast definitely said, I think it was Bronwyn, was talking about like a conversation. I'm going to fuck this up. So I'm apologize in advance. I guess don't hold it against me. This is the Burn Book episode of Salt Lake City of Andy's Girls. I feel like Bronwyn had said something about saying to Angie before they film this dinner, I'm not going to hold you to anything. Now, maybe she was referencing something that they said to each other after Heather announced the plan that just wasn't included in the episode. That is possible. But the way I heard it was like, yeah, because these women knew what was coming. It doesn't take a genius to notice that several, if not all of these text messages that are being shared are screenshots. We saw the kind of final Jeopardy of the cast sitting in quiet contemplation, trying to figure out when I said so-and-so was a twat. Like, we can see them searching. And one of them said that really what they were doing was like just searching someone's name. So whoever you had a big issue with, or maybe you had a cursory memory of saying some really horrifying shit, you're just searching for your name, for their name. So is it possible it could come up in whatever span of time they had to look through their phones? Yes. But do I think they were also honestly rightly given a heads up by production, Heather, whomever, that this was going to happen? Absolutely, I do. And that doesn't in any way impact or make me feel anything negative about this scene. No, I actually am like, thank you if that was the case, because it gave people possibly a little extra time maybe to really look for something like super extra fucked, but also to think to myself, like, what is it that I really am okay with having to publicly share? And everybody had to do it except, I guess, for Meredith, because everything blew up before she needed to really share her text. If I'm remembering, I don't think we saw her share it. And I watched the version that aired live and then the next day watched Peacock's Uncensored. And I couldn't tell you. I know that there was like technically extra content. I think some of it was around people giving background of, for example, Angie saying, I was so mad at Bronwyn after the like camp, whatever, our argument. And I felt like she was trying to drag me, that's why I said some fascinating things about her and her husband. Holy shit. But I really appreciate them at least having that little bit of extra time, if that is in fact what happened, because I do think it helped with the payoff. And holy shit with the payoff. But first, we need to go back. Heather is good at her job. She handled the podcaster stuff great. She had a way of connecting all of this that feels maybe a little stream of consciousness, because maybe it is, but also she has an idea of, I need to get from here to here and make it interesting. And she is a genuinely charismatic person who is also hashtag a writer girl. She's good with her words. She really is. So I truly transcribe this. Because I just think this was art. Like what we watched, there's going to be a wing at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, or probably MoMA more realistically. And it's just a bunch of TVs queued up, a zillion of them, with every single episode of Salt Lake City playing on mute at once. We should be so lucky to have a video installation at a nationally recognized art museum devoted to these women. I know we have the Bravo Museum at BravoCon, but it's time to escalate the matter. I think the women deserve as much. So this is what Heather had me by the balls when she started talking. When she did them, I was like, I'm here. I am exactly where you need to be, where you need me to be, completely glued to whatever the fuck is about to happen. Because then the guess what we're gonna do, really, I was shaken and I was stirred. Okay, this is Heather's little moment. And I don't do the impersonations. There are far more talented people. I just, the heart of the matter here, the actual focus on the words to me was glorious. Look at us. We are obsessed with trying to like find the receipts, trying to find the proof. I like how she's quoting herself. I'm into it. Trying to find the proof, trying to like poke holes in each other's stories, expose each other, find out who planted a story about us. It's not okay to have you having a horrible fight with them over a blogger who is exploiting all of, I like how they make their G's into K's, exploiting all of you, a stranger on the internet, a stranger, and he's turning you against each other. Every day we have to put on our armor to face the things that the world is gonna say about us. To be accountable for the things we do, for the people we are, but we are judged by the things we do, or we're judged privately and we're judged publicly. But we understand it, so we should support each other. We should like understand that it hurts when we're called bad mothers. Camera goes to Angie. It hurts when someone attacks our business, camera goes, I believe, to Whitney, but I could be wrong. It hurts when someone says that we are ugly. And the camera goes to Brittany. I would file suit in that moment if I was Brittany, because that was an LOL moment from the edit. It didn't need to happen. It was genuinely hilarious. Circling back, these are the types of things that we have to fight in the world. We shouldn't have to fight it here at this table. We made fun of Monica for having a burn book, and we all have our own burn books. But our burn books aren't like a curated fucking copy of Mean Girls. They're in our phones. And none of us are without fault. We've all said horrible, hurtful things about each other when we should have been honoring and celebrating and keeping this space sacred and private. All I've heard this whole night is like, I want to prove you is a bad friend. I want to prove you is a bad friend. I want to prove you is a bad friend. We thought we got rid of the problem last year, but we didn't. And I think tonight we're going to solve it. And this is the moment where I was like, Heather kicked into gear. And I just thought, we are watching a professional. We are watching an Olympian skate. Gold medals for everyone, most especially ourselves. But she's doing a fucking triple axel pirouette, fucking whatever else, Olympics, yada, yada. And let's just acknowledge the beauty in what she accomplished. But we did. And I think tonight we're going to solve it. I think we should take our phones, go through our text messages, find the worst thing we said about someone at this table. We're going to hand the thing that you said to the person that you said it about. And this was the part that was like especially wild. Oh my God. And they're going to read it out loud to the group. We burn it and we move on. So you're getting the maximum amount of emotion, reaction, response by not having Mary pull up her phone and say, this is some shit I said about Heather. No, no. We're having Mary say, Heather is the one I have selected for this. Hand her phone to Heather, and then Heather have to read a potentially horrifying thing that her fellow member of the friend circle has said about her. And then we all, quote unquote, move on. And we burn it. Just like Heather saying, we're all just about to burn to burn this table down to the ground. She's lit the dinner up with everything that is about to happen. She knows it. We know it. I think it's just a matter of like Jenga or something. What's that fucking game where it's like you put the thing in and then it might fall down, but who's going to be the one that makes the thing fall down? That's what we watched happen over text messages and a certain level of like almost masterful cruelty. And again, Angie K, I know that there's a lot that has been said about what Whitney says about Lisa, but really not Lisa, about Jonathan Barlow, seemingly a nice, kind man who Whitney wants to destroy because I guess that's her version of revenge. If you think about what the inciting alleged incident is that Whitney's so upset about, her belief, it's a belief that Lisa was bringing attention to what seemingly allegedly a genuine thing that Prism does, which is just they didn't pay enough money to have like exclusive designs. So they're going after what Alibaba does and just adding a huge fucking markup to it. Because she believes that Lisa slid into a content creator or maybe a couple content creators' DMs, she's going to say that Lisa and John are doing some shit in their marriage that she knows is going to embarrass them. It's actually not even that, because Whitney says after the fact, I know that this isn't true. So Whitney, in response to something Lisa said that a person could argue is true, allegedly, about Whitney's company or the company Whitney is fronting, MLM style, that Whitney's response is, I'm going to say something demonstrably false about you and your marriage. Whitney goes on the after show, and I will get back to the actual text. Whitney goes on the after show and says, I knew it wasn't true. I have actually said worse stuff about Lisa, but I felt bad about this. That is a psychotic thing to say out loud. I just thought to myself, because you know it's going to hurt her the most. You don't feel worse about that than you do calling her a bitch or whatever. You just know that this is going to land as a much deeper cut. But we'll get to it. Let's start with Mary. So Mary's text about Heather, which Heather reads out loud, sidebar, we don't know the majority of these. We don't know who the texts were sent to, which is the dot, dot, dot that I would like to have. I would just like to know, who did Mary talk about Heather with? Is the reason we're not getting who you spoke with, because that's going to come out at the reunion or going to come out when this obviously carries through to next season as well it should? Or is it not going to come out at all because you were talking to a producer, somebody from the network, someone where you feel like it's bursting the bubble if I acknowledge that this is someone, a part of our universe who we don't talk about unless Angie K is throwing rose petals at Lisa Barlow toward the end. Okay, so this is Mary's text about Heather. Heather, from day one, I never felt accepted by her or included as a part of this group. She changed once she became successful. I think it went to her head. She started getting aggressive and referring back to all the things she accomplished and threw it in our faces. And instead of being grateful for her blessings, it changed her to become competitive and super mean, all while she enjoyed the feeling of fame. She has forgotten the people who helped her get to where she is and who are truly happy and proud of her, like I have been and always will be. That I thought was kind of a profound dig. I mean, it's hard to really push back on this unless you're literally Heather reaching out loud and being like, let me just defend my character for a second. I don't think that Mary's entirely wrong here. I do think that some of us who, you know, began the great journey of Salt Lake City as Heather super fans, as I definitely did, there was a moment where it was like, okay, you've gone too big for your britches. It just doesn't feel real or authentic, or maybe you feel authentically mean, where it's like you've gotten too much and now you're either giving too little or you are being careless in ways that is kind of unfortunate. But honestly, the latter half of the season, I'm like, Heather, you keep doing you, boo. I get why Heather was so upset reading this and why she wanted to be like, listen, I don't feel like I have ill intent. But when someone's like, I never do, I mean, I don't know how I feel about that. I appreciated this being the thing that Mary shared. This is kind of the question here is like, when people are making these decisions, some of them are because you really want to fuck with the person that you probably still dislike. And then some of these are sort of varying, not like necessarily ends of the spectrum, but just there's kind of a little bit of a scale here of how bad was this actually to share. I thought it was honest and honestly kind of an appropriate way to start this. You don't want to start with Whitney, otherwise you end with Whitney. So I thought it was a nice way to start. Okay, then we get into poor, sweet, dumb, annoying icon Brittany, who says, I'll go next. And the worst thing that sweet, innocent, beloved, wonderful, kind, generous, sweet, innocent, beloved, wonderful, kind, generous, sweet, beloved, innocent, Brittany says about Mary, the thing that she's so overwhelmed with shame about because it crossed the line. It was just too cruel, was, I would like to invite Bronwyn over for tea instead of Mary tomorrow. Cut to like dot, 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 eyelashes going. I'm just so sweet. I'm just so sweet and so good and so pure that absolutely the worst thing that I did that I want you, the cast, production, and the audience to know about is this, silly me,
moment where I invited Bronwyn over for tea, aka to film, instead of Mary.
Tomorrow. Literally an iconic flop.
Brittany continues to give me so much faith in the future of Salt Lake City. Because if you can find a woman like Brittany, how many other Britneys are there on this earth? I would hope for everyone's sake, like just like a couple. But the fact that we were able to get Brittany at this time in this year, 2025, the year of our Lord and Savior, once again, Sutton Strack, to find Brittany now, season 5, and end this season with her being like, I'm such a dick. Because, you know, I invited Bronwyn over instead of Mary. Silly me. Her focus and phobia of being seen as anything other than incredible, amazing, perfect, to be celebrated day to day is something that should be studied. And I think it has been, BCC Andy Scrolls, and a variety of other platforms and areas, systems of government, to just really understand, try to understand, grapple with the fact that we'll never understand Brittany. I feel so blessed for all of us that we are at this point, at in this place, in this time, in this land, in this spectacular, spectacular land known as Salt Lake City, to meet Brittany now and to know that Brittany was not, is not currently, and probably never will be in on the joke. It is the best gift she could give us, is to just keep Britting along. Brittany gone Brit, and we will, the payoff for us, the dividends are enormous. It's just one giant eye roll packaged in a bottle of what, Kerastase or whatever the fuck. I've never tried it. It's too expensive for my hair. But like, God bless anyone who has. And hopefully Brittany will as well, but also hopefully not, because everything about her is perfect for us. And I guess Jared for the next 6 minutes. So we move on from that point to Bronwyn's. Now we're getting into the uh-oh, well, with some exceptions, maybe one and a half, the uh-oh era of this table exercise. God help anybody working at that restaurant, or it was like a resort or something. I don't even understand what was happening, but it was, all of it was iconic. Text by Bronwyn about Brittany. This is a little tough. Brittany is emotionally manipulative. She parentifies her children, trauma bonds in relationships, and is doing it to us. It's below her intelligence level, her age, ouch, and maturity level. And she's ageless by Ramona. And it makes me feel nervous, furious, and embarrassed for her. Again, need to know who that was sent to, but also tough. That is some rough, tough stuff. Obviously, Brittany is upset with the words parent and children being involved. And yeah, someone saying you are sort of like forcing your kids into roles that are too mature for them, that are not maybe appropriate for them in how you're looking for emotional support. I mean, we don't really know enough about Brittany to make that judgment. Obviously, Bronwyn has been around her a lot more than us. And there are some big fucking holes in Brittany's story that we haven't heard yet, or that hasn't been shown on the show, involving whatever happened between Brittany and her children that led to an estrangement. And honestly, maybe that's for the best. I don't know how dark this stuff gets. I would hope for Brittany's sake, if and when she continues as a friend of, because she's absolutely not going anywhere, that I would hope that like we don't see her kids on camera. I just think whatever's going on is some real serious stuff. And spoiler alert, I don't think that, you know, showing your family on reality television is necessarily going to help you repair some really, really deep cuts. So yeah, that was a tough moment. The level of emotional manipulation, I am guessing
that Bronwyn is going to get into that a little bit more at the reunion. Brittany certainly would, I would assume.
You know what's the light of my life? The Clawfuss, obviously, getting a chance to come into this colorful, unique space and breathe, especially after a wild holiday season. You know what else is the light of my life? The lighting fixture that my friend Tori and I picked out from Wayfair, which is such a conversation starter. It's modern, it's beautiful, the light bulbs, of course, are key. Amidst so much chaos in New York City, and of course the up and downs of housewives, I wanted my apartment to feel calm, soothing, fun, and feminine. And thanks to Wayfair, all of my dreams, minus Chris Manzo, have come true. Wayfair is super easy to use, especially for me, someone who has an idea of what I want, but oftentimes can get a little stuck in the details. Delivery was free, hassle-free, and I love that each room in my apartment feels different. From the lighting fixtures in the Clawfuss versus the living room, to the way I use color in the Clawfuss versus the living room. Wayfair has it all. And P.S. Hanukkah Harry, thanks to Wayfair, brought me an espresso machine. Because after this season of New York, a little extra caffeine is needed. Wayfair has everything your home needs this spring, and Wayfair has what you're looking for at any budget. There's something for every style in every home. Wayfair makes it easy to tackle your New Year's home goals with endless inspiration for every space. And it's free and easy delivery, even on the big stuff. Give your home the refresh it needs with Wayfair. Head to wayfair.com right now. That's WAYFAIR.com. Wayfair, every style, every home.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But that was, to me, not to take away from it, because it was a shot. But then there is a little ditty about Bronwyn, which, thank God, we found out was something Angie K sent to Heather, because that makes sense. And when Angie's responses to it in the moment were interesting. Angie's responses to some of the worst stuff that was shared when the camera, the edit was not kind to Angie and I think Brittany, or maybe I was just seeing this regardless and I could have absolutely been wrong, but like we got some hints of smiles from Angie K and Brittany when Bronwyn was in the hot seat, when God knows Lisa Barlow was in the hot seat. There was some, I am kind of enjoying this, that might have come from awkwardness or embarrassment or just being in this universe for a while and seeing the play taking place and play and all the words. So this was Angie K's very light, just a little ditty about Bronwyn that I guess she sent to Heather that Bronwyn had to read out loud to her new friends and also us. Bronwyn seems nice. I like her business plan, marrying a guy who has one foot in the grave. And then we see Angie K cut in and say, oh, she's already crying. Like being a little extra passive aggressive, which wasn't necessary at this point, sweetie. We have more text to go. And Bronwyn continues, one foot in the grave. Oh, she's already crying. And one on a banana peel. But I like mine better. I'd rather be self-made. She's nice, but she doesn't listen because her ears are stitched down to her face so tight she can't hear anything. She wears a hot dog outfit to remind us she sucked her way to the top. I know that what Whitney alleges or shares or whatever about Lisa and John is explosive. I get it. And a whole lot of that is focused on some like sex shamey stuff, but also marriage shamey stuff, but also secret shamey. That's all fine and good. I can completely understand how Whitney intended it, and spoiler alert, she was successful. But this was so deep and so mean, and Angie's response to it, which is maybe coming because she's a little embarrassed, but like, she could have chosen anything else. I'm not begrudging her for following the instructions, but holy shit, I had no idea she had this in her. She literally goes, this lady seems nice. Her old husband, who she doesn't want to fuck, is about to die. Her face looks terrible, and she sucked a lot of dicks to get to her current marriage. Go me, I'm self-employed. Like, that is, the banana peel of it all was like, I don't even understand what's happening. So I guess what she was saying was, and this could be wrong, we all need to figure out what part of him is with the banana peel, but one foot in the grave, I think that's self-explanatory. One foot on a banana peel, I believe means that he is like gonna die at any moment. God forbid, knock on table, gonna die at, knock on mirror table, not gonna die at any moment. So like, it could happen however, which is, so he's, I mean, both feet pointing to things death related. And then being like, sidebar, I like mine better. I'd rather be self-made. Going into the, I mean, listen, I haven't, oh yeah, I actually have seen Bronwyn in person because she was scooping ice cream at a, like a Bravo partnered event with Angie K. And now knowing what they said about each other, what a wild holy trinity to have. It was, but these are all professionals. Let me tell you that. Bronwyn, Angie K, and Mary were scooping Salt Lake City themed ice cream at an event, in Midtown. It was a delight. I saw Bronwyn in person. I mean, I'm not saying what Angie K is saying is, I don't know if she was just pulling shit out of her ass. Bronwyn is gorgeous. They all are. So like, I didn't see any bad surgery. This isn't like old school Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Apologies. And maybe, do I want to say New Jersey? No, Miami. It's not old school Beverly Hills or Miami, and like, she looked beautiful. I not that I'm trying to disagree with what Angie is saying. I mean, obviously it was tough. That's like the meanest thing that you can say. You're trying to get this woman at every level. You're like, you're ugly. You sort of didn't use your money effectively, I guess, for a better surgeon. You're a slut. I mean, this is high body count hair, I don't think is like slut shaming. Saying a woman sucked her way to the top, she's not sucking on a balloon to rise above the crowd. We're talking about dicks. She's sucking dick is what, this is a podcast rated censored, rated explicit for a reason. She be sucking dick. She be fucking is what Angie is saying. And she picked a guy who's intentionally, well, I mean, not his fault. He was born a century ago, but you're saying Bronwyn pulled an Anna Nicole Smith. Never thought I would see those two, you know, pop culture icons, Bronwyn and Anna Nicole Smith, compared to each other, but that's kind of what's happening here. And also, the eloquence, the punch of starting with Bronwyn seems nice, knowing what she's going to say next is like, your old man is about to die. You only married him for his money. Not necessarily an original sentiment, but one expressed in a relatively pointed manner. Then you make fun of her, or you're just awkwardly, I don't even know what, trying to hide, but I don't, that wasn't the energy that Angie K was giving me. Oh, she's already crying. Yeah, I would be, that would break me in half. Especially if I was experiencing what Bronwyn has discussed. I'm not saying she's innocent in her behavior this season, but if you know her greatest fear is to like continue to be misunderstood, alienated, and alone, and this person is like every single concern, all of your worst fears that have been communicated to the group before or after I wrote this text, I am making sure that you now have to read it aloud to the group. Angie K is a little more complicated than I gave her credit for. She's Bambi. I don't even, playing Clue. Like, Bambi's in the living room with a revolver. Like, this woman can really destroy. I mean, that is a, I don't, of all of the apologies that housewives have had to give to each other's spouses over the years, I mean, I just can't imagine the moment from the reunion of Angie being like, I think you're beautiful. Well, she did say this during the episode. I love the hot dog outfit. Obviously you did. Todd, continue taking your vitamins. You are ageless by Ramona, as we all are. You're not going anywhere. Maybe go for an orange next time or find a different way of getting potassium than bananas, but also it was a joke or whatever. And Bronwyn, again, you're very pretty and very nice. Like, I don't know how you come back from this. And the fact that she can't hear anything because her ears are stitched down to her face so tight. I am not smart enough, or I don't even want to say mean enough, because I can absolutely be a dick. I just, it wouldn't occur to me to be so cruel. I don't know. Maybe it's because I haven't filmed reality TV before. We're just like, I'm absolutely not a better person than Angie K. Absolutely not. But like, I just can't imagine. But this is why I'm not in reality TV, because I don't have the gift. I just, like, I've said cruel things about me, obviously, but I just can't imagine saying that all at once and then choosing to say it to all of us. Like, and the fact that she started it by saying a little ditty. It's a little ditty. Teddy Joe Carrot, this isn't about you. I know you just heard some lyrics from your dad, but this is not that. This is not a John Mellencamp situation. This is a different little ditty about Bronwyn that truly broke me in half. I could believe if it was Heather saying it. I really could. I just, the fact that it was Angie K who said this, I was shaken. I was shaken by it. Then we get into, you know, a real cruel thing that Lisa starts off by saying she said it about Meredith last year. So that could go in a couple different places. That could be a terrible thing or just a thing that's taking up space. She went more the Britney route, but I think it's also because Lisa's like, I paid my dues in saying terrible things about someone I was then feuding with. So Lisa's text about Meredith, which again, she timestamps, was last year. She says, I feel like Meredith digs up information to weaponize. It is fucking dirty and I don't like it. So we went from your husband's about to die, your face is a flop, you sucked your way to the top, to like, maybe Meredith digs up rumors and stuff, and she's not disengaging in the ways that she wants us to believe. It was, but I get it. Lisa, I think in that moment, is allowed a lighter lift because she doesn't want to fuck with Meredith. And also, why didn't she say anything about anybody else? You know, Lisa has said some shit about other people. Maybe she felt like this is her way of participating. She and Meredith have enough trust in each other that she can just do a little gingerly tap and Meredith will be okay. I couldn't tell you. Then we go back to Heather Gay, who I think put a lot of intention in her choice, because again, this is a wonderful way to gain a certain amount of revenge, embarrass or humiliate someone, and then be like, but we're okay, right? Because you can't hold it against me, this thing I did that you absolutely can. You can't, because the thing is, and this is how feelings work, is that if your feelings are hurt, they're only hurt for the next 3 minutes and then never again. So Heather's text about Whitney to somebody, whomever, we don't know, that Whitney reads is, Whitney is a lowlife, thirsty piece of shit. She sold her soul for fame and recognition. She's a snake, and I should have never trusted her. I've been so stupid and loyal, carrying her stupid Wild Rose products, even though we never sold a fucking one. There's a lot there to unpack. There is Whitney being a lowlife, thirsty piece of shit, selling her soul for fame and recognition, something that arguably we can see, I would say, my opinion, in her response to Lisa Barlow, who's up next. She's a snake. That hurts. if I was Whitney, knowing how pissed she is about the Alibaba thing, the fact that Wild Rose did not sell a single moisturizer or mascara, I don't remember what it carried, or face wash. I couldn't tell you. If you have been harmed by Whitney Rose products just in spending $40 that you'll never get back, please let me know what you got. I bet it was fabulous, but I don't know. That was tough. The fact that it ended with them being like, we have a fun little secret handshake because we're cousins. I mean, shit, man. That was wild. This episode was, spoiler alert, spectacular. This was the craziest. Who in their life, this is escapism, who in their life would gather around a circle of friends and coworkers, but friends, and be like, let's all say terrible things about each other, but make sure a key part of it is the person you're talking shit about needs to read the text to the group. That is an act of war. That is a literal act of war. So then we get to Whitney, who has been chomping at the bit, sharpening her knives, ready to break Lisa down, which she absolutely did. And this moment reveals a couple things. First off, if I was Angie, well, I guess I'd be feeling a certain way about what happens after this text that probably negates what I'm about to say. But I don't know that I would be thrilled about Whitney revealing that she sent what I'm about to say to Angie, knowing Angie and Lisa's relationship. Because the first thing I thought when Whitney goes, I wrote this text to Angie, my first thought was, and Angie didn't tell Lisa, from what we know, a fucking thing about it, which is going to be a big fucking issue. Because Whitney and Lisa don't necessarily need to get along, but we know that Lisa and Angie seemingly had a real friendship, I guess, until this season or whatever. So I would say when it comes to loyalty or something, it's a big fucking deal for Angie not to mention it. Now, maybe, I guess a person could argue, well, we know Lisa Barlow is relatively paranoid, she wouldn't be able to get past this, whatever. But still, I don't think that necessarily gets you out of it, get out of jail free card, can't collect $200. I don't think that you can really say, like, that's enough of a reason not to. And also, what was Angie's response? That's the other part of this, of like making sure that you have screenshots of one text and not the response or ability to see if it was hearted or there was a laugh. I assume all of these texts are in blue. This is an iPhone community, iPhone circle of trust. Like, did Angie laugh? Did she heart it? Did she thumbs up it? You can't double thumbs. So a single thumb is approval. The double thumb, as we know from seasons past, is go fuck yourself. That apparently didn't happen. So Whitney says, I wrote this text to Angie after I heard this rumor from a friend of mine, which as a sentence doesn't make sense from what it is, from the rest of what it is that she has to say. She continues, and I just feel like I chose this because I feel like this is the thing that I feel the worst about, and I want to clear the air about it. So Whitney's saying, this is the worst thing that I feel the worst about, and I want to clear the air about it. Lisa doesn't know about it, and because I feel so bad about believing a rumor, I'm now going to share it on national television on a show that's absolutely going to highlight this as a pretty big moment because I hate Lisa Barlow more than I feel bad. Like, you feel bad that you gossiped about this person, her sex life, her marriage. So you make sure to say it on camera, even though on the after show, you're like, LOL, I had some other stuff I could have said that's worse. But you wanted to focus on the rumor and the nastiness because you knew it would cut the deepest. And this was the text. So I was at a party with Justin, and a woman approached us saying that if we ever wanted to bring in a third, she is our girl. In fact, Lisa and John can vouch for her because she has made out with Lisa while jerking off John. And Lisa's immediate response, as Rome is burning down, is, what the fuck is that? Because genuinely, what the fuck is that? That is, and also, truly what was Angie's response. If Whitney came out with a Patreon and the premium tier was like, I'll show you the full screenshot, I would give her more than what her $50 prism necklace cost to actually manufacture, which was like $1.99. I would give her the balance, or I would ask someone else to, and then slide into my DMs to see what Angie's response was to that. Because then when we get into a trigger warning analogy that Lisa has about Angie, Angie loses her fucking mind. And the whole point of that, I think, is proving Lisa's point, which is like, you should have a real big problem with someone coming to my coming for my marriage, which is what Lisa does. She makes an analogy that worked out super well on Real Housewives of New Jersey. She makes an analogy to Angie, like, how would you feel if I said I heard Sean does circle jerks? And what Angie heard was, I, Lisa Barlow, am saying that I heard Sean does circle jerks, which is not what she said. But it wasn't the first time in the history of Salt Lake City, or perhaps this dinner, that someone misinterpreted another person's response. I get Angie blowing up. I do think the blow up is proving Lisa's point, however clumsily she expressed it, that like, you should have a problem if a co-star friend cast member is coming for me, but more importantly, my husband. Like, what did John ever do to Whitney? And also, hate to say it, and there's a lot that can be said about Lisa Barlow, genuine criticism, noting I think she's an iconic, one of the best housewives of all time. You can say some stuff, she being self-absorbed, not being a good friend, whatever else. But I do think it's valid that no one, I mean, excepting, I guess, what Angie, involved in a couple of these things, what Angie said about, Angie's maybe more of a mean girl than anyone knew prior to when this night aired on to Wednesday night or whatever, that I don't think anyone said sexual things about anyone else's marriage but Lisa. Now, Angie K said sexual things, sort of not Jamie things, about Bronwyn in her text, and also said, you know, Todd was 1 foot out the door in a grave or whatever. But I think Bronwyn calling Lisa's response repulsive for making the analogy is, to me, just ever so slightly missing the mark. Because the way I heard it, and I could be 100% wrong, but the way I heard it was that Lisa, without using the word analogy, not that that maybe would have helped matters with this group at that moment, was saying, how would you feel if someone said X sexual thing about Sean? Believing that Angie would be upset, spoiler alert, she would be. And now it's been kind of repurposed as, well, Lisa's doing exactly what Whitney did to her. No, I felt like Lisa's giving an example of how shitty it is that Whitney did that thing to her. And also, when I went back, because, you know, I watched it 2 times in full, but like, I watched some of these moments more than once, when the conversation started and the focus was on Whitney, I noticed that there was audio only for this sentence. I wrote this text to Angie after I heard this rumor from a friend of mine. And then it picks up with like watching Whitney say the following. And I just feel like I chose this because I feel like this is the thing that I feel the worst about, XYZ bullshit, bullshit. And then says the thing about the jerking off and whatnot. Wow. That I think it's interesting that the part where she says, I wrote this text to Angie after I heard this rumor from a friend of mine, may have been an insert. Like, that might have been an audio pickup. Wouldn't be the first or 700th time that that has happened in the universe of TV editing and TV production pickups. You know, we can get that with ADR. We can get that with audio pickups. We can get that with confessional pickups where they're filling in holes, providing a little bit, I mean, not those, providing a little bit more clarity, whatever else. But I did think it was interesting that she was sort of taking herself out of it of like, after I heard this rumor from a friend of mine, which you could argue rumor better supports Lisa and John in saying this is rumor and speculation, which wasn't clear, I think, when she's saying this. I mean, she's saying this is the thing I feel worse about, but she's not explicitly saying why in the moment, at that moment. But it is weird that Whitney's saying, I heard this rumor from a friend of mine, and then saying, I myself was at a party with Justin and a woman approached us. So maybe she's saying the woman approached us and said a rumor, but it's not really a rumor if it happened to that woman directly. I mean, I guess the way that you're responding to it is saying, I heard a rumor from this person, but I just thought the language of it, I don't know why I was so focused on it, but in that moment I was like, that's a weird thing to, a weird way to describe it. But also the choice to share it was so shitty. Whitney sucks. And I just like, I don't know if this is coming because she's just really believes that she is Steve Jobs. She's just one gold-plated necklace away from creating Apple. Shout out Prism. I don't know that that is really what's happening. I think Whitney has to believe as strongly as possible that proof is her opinion, that like, I really think Lisa did this thing and someone else maybe lied to me or didn't, and that is proof enough. It's just such an odd thing to litigate about, except I understand you want to be able to trust people in the group. And if Lisa is contributing to like rumors or speculation about you and your business, yeah, you're going to be upset about it. But the way she responds to it in all out war at the lunch, what she said about Lisa at the lunch was like nuts. Like that was a lot. So to say that during the daytime and then we shift over to night, I'm like, damn. I mean, her text arguably could have just been like, can someone just share me a transcript of what I said like 4 hours ago? That'll suffice. I was pretty fucking mad. But to add poor John Barlow into this, I just thought that was a little nuts. I just really thought like, ooh, that's a rough blow for you to bring up, where you're sort of sacrificing John in order to trigger Lisa as much as humanly fucking possible. Listen, what can I say? It's gonna, you know, Angie brought Mary sisterhood and so did the group on this episode. It was a wild episode, a wild finale, and what is going to lead into an incredible, iconic reunion. You know that reunion is going to be great. The reunion, there's no possibility, God forbid, but there's no possibility that the reunion is going to be anything less than great. It just is. It's just science, as Whitney would probably say, because I believe that it's going to be great, which means it is. That's how facts work in Whitney's world and apparently also in mine. So anyway, I just wanted to share like a couple quick thoughts on the finale, because it was meaningful to me. It was meaningful. It was powerful. I get into it with a guest on an upcoming AG and also have another upcoming AG with another guest where we sit shiva for what remains of New New York and also get into Beverly Hills on both episodes. So looking forward to sharing those with all of us in our Andy's Girls friend circle soon. In the meantime, send me your satchels of gold, your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Clorne Ben Simone. Slide into my DMs on Instagram at Dame Galley. Share them along with your first name and town, and they may be featured in an upcoming Patreon episode. Patreon, the number one way to support the pod. You get exclusive bonus episodes like those upcoming satchel spectaculars at patreon.com/andysgirls. Follow me on Instagram at Dame Galley. Also on IG, I'm participating in a creator fundraiser for the Los Angeles Fire Department Foundation. We've raised, I think, just under $19,000. Our goal is to hit 20. So appreciative and thankful for all of your support in whatever way you choose to make it. And there is a link in the show notes for this episode to a bunch of organizations, ways to financially donate, volunteer your time, and more to help all of those directly impacted by the LA wildfires. And there have been thousands and thousands and thousands of people whose lives have forever changed. So however we can come together as a Bravo community and help support, I'm so thankful to all of you for participating in that fundraiser, and however you are able to lend a hand, I think is incredible. So thanks to all of you for listening to this episode. what a gift, what a joy, what a treat. I'm never going to get over that Angie text, not for the rest of my life. Like, I know the John one was explosive, but I just, the way that Angie connected those dots, the way that she, God forbid, threaded that needle in how she was illustrating Angie, did the punishment, illustrating Bronwyn, did the punishment fit the crime? Arguably not, but holy shit, is Angie ever so slightly more complicated than I gave her credit for. Let's see what version she brings to the reunion. I absolutely cannot wait to watch. Thanks again to all of you for listening to this episode, and I will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.